You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Mark Gilderman.
And then very quickly, what we found is that we had this signal coming out of these SLED formats where duration was predictive of a lot of results that we were seeing downstream. And so we realized we could start transacting and start charging advertisers based on duration metrics.
Mark is the co-founder and CEO of Parsec Media, the first marketplace to sell media based on time spent. Parsec Media is the owner and operator of Adelaide, the first performance tool for brand builders. A longtime entrepreneur, Mark is experienced in synthesizing his experience across digital media, computer security, and decision sciences to develop simple yet powerful solutions. Prior to creating SLED and Parsec, Mark was the founding CEO of Enneken and SpongeCell Inc., spending 2 decades at internet and technology firms. Before digital media, he worked in the wireless network security industry, where he developed the first wireless virus filter. Mr. Gilderman led technical services and marketing efforts for both Vernier Networks and Network Chemistry. Mark graduated from Carnegie Mellon with a degree in social decision sciences and currently resides in Brooklyn. Mark, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. It's great to be here.
So I am someone that is fascinated by people's backgrounds and all the disparate backgrounds that I think come together and help us to build brands, grow businesses, and a degree in social decision sciences is something that I don't believe that we've had on the show before. It has not been announced. So talk me through what I assume sounds like a very relevant field of study, which I should note isn't always the case for folks that work in branding. But from what I would assume social decision sciences is all about, that has to be about, has to be really helpful in winning the hearts and minds of customers.
Yeah, I mean, oddly enough, there was very little marketing per se in my undergrad degree. But it was, I like to think of it as sort of like an undergrad MBA. It was a Carnegie Mellon. It has a reputation for having interdisciplinary programs, and decision sciences was definitely one of those. So we did some philosophy, some psychology, some statistics, just undergraduate like business management type stuff. So it was, there was only 3 of us in the program. And I was a little bit of a slacker in college, and I found one of the degrees with the fewest prerequisites and allowed me as much freedom as I could get. So I didn't really pick it with the best intentions, but it's ended up serving me well. And in the long run, I run into a lot of people in digital advertising, especially on the analytics side, with a background in decision sciences. So it's served me well.
Well, as you say that, and talking about Carnegie Mellon being known for interdisciplinary fields, I can't resist the schlocky reference that I feel like brand building is really kind of the ultimate discipline, interdisciplinary field, because it's something that, you know, by its nature, you can't, at least successfully, and what we've talked about a lot here, you can't stay in your lane. You can't stay in your slot on the org chart. It's it involves so many other areas internally, but also externally as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think that especially there's 2 big trends that make that more true now than ever before. The first is digital, right? There's a lot more data, a lot more analytics. I think that branding has, I wouldn't say digital, I'll say in the past couple of years, as as the consumption of media has moved from traditional mediums pretty much entirely to digital mediums, it's become more and more important for marketers to understand statistics and economics and how to analyze things in real time rather than looking at looser, more typical brand metrics.
Right. There's only more numbers, more data inputs today. So we have to know a little bit about what to do with it and also what it means back to, again, the social decisions that we're going to make based on any of this as well.
Yep. Yep. I think the other major trend is around evidence-based marketing, right? So our namesake is Adelaide, Australia, right? And that's where Aaron Berg Bass is based with Byron Sharp, who wrote How Brands Grow, which I read about 2 years ago and changed the way that I think about advertising. So I think that there's a big push around using data and the scientific method and like real control and exposed groups to drive better decisioning. So I think that those two things together make decision sciences more applicable than ever in marketing and branding.
I think that is so true. And again, with kind of building on evidence-based marketing, talk a little bit about your work. And as mentioned in your bio, you know, the first marketplace to sell media based on time spent. Tell folks a bit about that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I can go all the way back to my first advertising startup, SpongeCell. I came out of Carnegie Mellon and went into wireless security, worked for a couple startups, and then had to use a PC for the first time in my life at the second company I worked for. It was a pretty miserable experience, and so I decided, this is right around the time of Web 2.0, that I was going to make a web calendar with a lot of the same functionality as Outlook, but just without having to, you know, run a version on my desktop. So raised money from IPG for that company, and eventually they sort of pushed us into digital advertising. I was shocked when I learned how the industry was transacting and what sort of the currency was of digital advertising being the impression. So at SpongeCell, we tinkered with different metrics around engagement, around like cost per engagement and charging advertisers based on how people use their ads and engage with their ads. We realized that was sort of an imperfect metric because of low engagement rates in display advertising. So when I started Sled, which became Parsec, the first thing we wanted to do was to solve the biggest problem that I see in digital, which is a proliferation of ad formats. You know, there's hundreds or maybe even thousands of digital advertising formats, where in more mature mediums, there's really only one or two, right? TV, radio, and print have very consistent ad formats, which allows for the use of consistent metrics. But digital advertising has hundreds, so we're like, all right, Sled, we're going to make one ad format. It's going to be reminiscent of print. It's a full screen ad in line with content. And then very quickly, what we found is that we had this signal coming out of these SLED formats where duration was predictive of a lot of results that we were seeing downstream. And so we realized we could start transacting and start charging advertisers based on duration metrics. And so that was sort of the insight that led to the foundation of Parsec. Parsec was selling ads on a cost per second basis. It worked really, really well, but the rest of the industry was moving away from ad networks towards programmatic advertising. So a lot of our big brand advertisers who weren't interested in buying using more traditional digital metrics like CTR or viewability even, were very excited about the results that they were seeing from Parsec, but didn't want to buy from an ad network. So they kept pushing us, like, how can we use this data? How can we use your insights across all of our media? My first couple of meetings, I thought, oh, wow, we're going to be a massive ad network because we have brands that want to run all of their media through us. What they really meant, though, is they just wanted the internal engine that we had built to optimize towards more efficient sources of attention. They wanted to use that to analyze all of their media. So that was the insight that drove Adelaide. We started working on Adelaide about 15 months ago and launched it last summer. And it's been really successful. Brands have found that they can drive like 15 to 30% incremental outcomes just by optimizing towards more efficient sources of attention.
So go a little deeper on some of those use cases of how brands can drive that kind of growth based on time and duration.
Well, so it's interesting because as we moved out of selling on a cost per second, and we were selling these full screen ad formats where duration was a perfect proxy for attention, especially when the format is, as we described it, politely interruptive. And a politely interruptive format means that it captures your attention for the amount of time that you control as a consumer. So we in Parsec land, like, we had full control over the ad format, and so we knew that duration was this perfect form. It was a very good proxy for outcomes. And as we moved into the more general world where we had these thousands of formats to deal with, we had to integrate other types of factors. And the goal of all of the data that we are bringing into Adelaide is to create a predictive metric for the likelihood that someone is going to pay attention to ads. So in addition to duration, we look at the rest of the the rest of the environment, like how many other ads are on the page, how big is the ad, where is the ad on the page, how fast is the page moving. We take all of that data, we crunch it up, and we produce a single metric called an attention unit. And that attention unit is used to score any type of digital media. And it's really predictive, like I said, of what's the likelihood that someone's going to pay attention to this ad. There's a very clear dichotomy that I see between inattention and inattention metrics around the job of media and the job of creative. The job of media is really to get eyeballs on a message. And from that point forward, it's the creative's job to capture that attention, keep it focused on the message, and then introduce branding elements, right? Distinctive assets or whatever it is that the brand wants to use to get their message across. So there's this really interesting nuance between the job of media and the job of creative that you can start to untangle using attention metrics.
Hey, On Brand listeners, Nick Westergaard here. This is usually the point in the show where I mention that I'd love to speak at your next conference or corporate event. However, given current circumstances, most live events are being postponed or they're moving to virtual events. All of my keynotes are available virtually as webinars, including new talks on marketing in times of crisis and on virtual communication itself. As a listener of the On Brand podcast, you know I can keep an online audience engaged. I've also conducted countless global webinars and online education programs. Learn more now at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's Nick Westergaard with two A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So what you just said is fascinating. The both the role of media and creative, and that kind of this undercurrent of what duration plays into that as well. I would assume that is a part of your own marketing. Are some of the lessons that you've learned on optimizing creative for duration? Are there macro lessons that you've learned that you're able to share?
Yeah. So in terms of macro lessons, like I think the biggest mistake that people make is that people care about their advertising, be it on an individual placement level or on a larger brand scale. On an individual placement level, right, you have somebody who's going to run a 15-second animation inside of a 300x250. That just doesn't make any sense, right? We partner with a company named Lumen to start something called the Attention Council, which we did with a few other companies like Amplified Intelligence and Avocet and T-Vision. And what Lumen found was that the only 4% of display ads are looked at for more than 2 seconds, right? So you are very lucky if you're going to get 1 or 2 seconds onto an ad. You don't need a 15-second creative, right? You should really start to think about, or brands should really start to think about, what's the right message for the medium, right? How do you That's another great use of attention metrics, because you might have the same placement on two different websites that's going to get a totally different amount of attention. When you start to think about how much attention is that placement going to get, you can start to tailor the creative for that. And then, you know, on a larger level, just I think anybody in advertising gets so close to their brand and so close to their message, but it plays such a small part in consumers' lives. So I think, you know, and this is sort of veering away from attention land, but starting to think about, like, as a brand trying to communicate with somebody, understanding where you sit in their hierarchy of needs and how inconsequential you are.
Well, that is such an interesting interplay too. And if listeners heard the audio trouble, that was me nervously laughing at at Mark's point about how much we assume that folks are paying attention to our ads, that we spend hours in meetings stressing over the right creative, and it's lucky to merit a glance, probably in most cases.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going way off the rails of attention, but, like, you know, like that's one of the reasons why brands want to refresh their creative all the time, and it doesn't make any sense. It's great. There's all this research coming out around like real evidence-based marketing, like the work that Bennett and Field are doing at the IPA, and of course with Byron Sharp and everybody's doing at Aaron Burr Bass, around, like, you really should just stick with one distinctive asset for decades, right? And that's what works, right? You create salience in people's minds for your brand and the category entry point. So I think that, like, yeah, the brand is so important to the marketer, but to the consumer, it's like such a small, fleeting thing. And one of the very interesting research we've seen during COVID is I was talking with somebody at IRI the other day about this. People are switching a lot during COVID, right? Like brand loyalty is out the window. So I think that's a great sort of reflection on how insignificant a brand is in a typical consumer's life.
Well, and I think that what you said kind of brings up two very interesting and somewhat disparate trends, in that, you know, we see in the research, as you note, this, you know, the strength in a very simple, very consistent brand message symbol over time. And yet, you know, we know that that works. And yet we know that the conversations that were happening are about we need to tweak the creative. Yeah, but we did that a few months ago. Now it's time for this. And we just kind of go season after season of rehashing all of this. And then kind of the other disjointed thing that, again, it seems like these, I don't know how the cognitive dissonance always gets resolved. And it's those same people that want to see the new creative that are wondering, you know, why can't we be that icon of Nike, of Starbucks, of everything else? And they're the ones that have been repeating those same signals over time. And people kind of think it just kind of magically happens and is grown in a lab.
Now it takes a lot of self-control on behalf of a marketer to build long-term salience, right?
Well, and I love that label of it too, of long-term salience, because we use these, you know, either kind of cold metric type terms, or we say, you know, we want people to love our brand, but it is building that meaning over time that is really, back to the interdisciplinary point, is both an art and a science, and seems suited to that interplay of media and creative.
Yeah, and I think people that talk about brand love, there's definitely, there's some brands that I hold in a very high regard, but it's not because of their advertising, right? Like, I love Delta, but I love Delta because I emailed their CEO 3 years ago and he responded in one day, and then they took care of a nasty travel problem I have. It's not because of an advertisement that I saw. So brand love exists, but I don't think it has anything to do with mass marketing, like mass media.
Right. It's, I mean, and that's, I love all of the times that you've warned me that we're veering away from attention land, which maybe it's just because we haven't been able to go to amusement parks or anything, but attention land seems like a very boring amusement park that marketers would go to. But
it's not boring. Attention land's very.
I was going to say, I guess by its very nature, attention land should be the opposite of boring. But there's going to be a lot of ads competing for your attention there in attention land. But it's interesting because we want to, like you said, all of the mass market messages that we put out there, and so much of it still comes back to. To what we're doing, and that's, if all of this wasn't already hard to get your arms around, all of that is that you can do what you may, but you still need to make sure that you're walking the talk of all of that, like Delta did with you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can spend a ton on branding, but if you don't, like you said, if you don't walk the walk, it's all for nothing. You made an interesting point around the difficulty of sort of the digital world compared to the analog world. I think that's really really important, right? It used to be as easy as a GRP for a brand, right? Because TV advertising, print advertising is very, very consistent. And in digital, there's way, way more opportunity to connect with people, but there's way, way more noise out there, right? So you start to think about, what's your share of voice, right? That's a typical metric that an advertiser might use to understand where they are in comparison to their competitors. Share of voice used to just be like, how much are you spending or how many GRPs are you getting? In digital, you know, a GRP is effectively based on an impression. In digital, every impression is different. So now as a brand, you need to really understand what's your share of attention. And once you can start to boil down your media spend as it, you know, in terms of how much attention it's returning, you can, as a brand, you can start to return to that level of simplicity of the GRP, right? Metrics don't have to be complicated. I think middlemen and people that sit in between the sort of the triangle of consumers, publishers, and brands like complexity, right?
Yeah.
There's a famous guy at Group M who once said, where there's mystery, there's margin, right? which media agencies and ad agencies love in general, because you know, where there's mystery and where when markets are inefficient, there's a way to make a lot of money. There's also a way to lose a lot of money. And I think that, you know, in digital advertising, there's a lot of bad metrics being used. That creates a lot of risk for advertisers that don't have good data. But before the market repairs itself and we get to a place where people are transacting on metrics that actually reflect value, there's this amazing window of opportunity for brands to go out there and essentially beat the market. It's like you're the first brand that understands price to earnings on the stock market. You understand the real value of the thing you're buying. So I think that it's definitely a crazy time right now. There's lots of ways to reach consumers and everything is changing very quickly. But there's a great opportunity for brands who have the right data.
Well, and I'm sure that is an exciting prospect to those listening to think about, to be one of the brands with the data. If they're not, or if you strive to be that, what's one thing that folks listening could do to level up their evidence-based game today?
So the first thing I would do is start running real experiments. So real exposed and control experiments, it's like the basis of science. You just expose a certain number of people to your advertising. You hold back another group of people, and then you look at the difference. You actually look at the effect that was created by that advertising when you're comparing the exposed and the control group versus just running some media against an audience, measuring brand lift, and then assuming that all of that brand lift came from that campaign. Because, you know, advertising is gonna nudge you a certain way. It's not gonna create desire and drive the massive effects that you'll normally see in a brand lift study if you don't actually have a control group.
That is great advice, running real experiments. As a psychology major myself, to bring it full circle, I love the emphasis on bringing it back to some real science. Mark, as we wrap up, as we've shared stories that have collectively made us smile about Attention Land, the park that we may have to go on and found after this, what is a brand that has made you smile?
So I just want to go back to Delta, right? Like, it's not from an ad, but it's from an experience, right? It's really what you said too. It's the brand backing up their, like, what they talk about with how they, with the actual walk. So I think it's the experience that I've had with Delta. I love them. Like, I will connect on a Delta flight rather than take another airline, which seems like a travesty to anybody who's a business traveler. But yeah, I think that's my example.
Well, and it's a great one, and decidedly on brand given our conversation. Mark, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Best is on our website. It's adelaidelift.com. And you can go there, you can learn about our product, and we're happy to help brands dip their toes in the waters of Attention Land by running an attention audit for them. So reach out. We'd love to engage with you and help brands understand how to more efficiently capture attention and drive outcomes.
Awesome. And we'll include that as well as other information in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Mark, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks for having me, Nick. I appreciate it.
And remember, if you like what you've heard, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.